Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Think back on your childhood for a moment and zero in on, say, junior high and high school. Do you remember that sense that your parents were really weird compared with everybody else's? As adults, most of us realize those feelings are pretty universal and very often completely exaggerated by the stresses of adolescence. But what if your story included a mother who owned and wore dozens of copies of the same dress every single day and happily dropped you off as a kindergartner to be babysat by a bartender at a resort hotel who would give you as many rum-laced cocktails as you could drink? What if your father was an internationally known decorator by day and a psychic healer by night who made no distinction between talking with the living and communicating with the dead, and who could check up on you day and night by tapping into a worldwide network of departed spirits? If your childhood were like Philip Smith's, you might decide to write a memoir about it too, just to explain it to the rest of us. Philip Smith is an artist and former managing editor of GQ magazine. His new book, a memoir, is called Walking Through Walls. Philip, welcome to Think.
Chris, thanks so much for having me here.
What are your earliest memories of your parents?
They're all good. They're all wonderful. My parents were truly individuals. Other people might call them eccentrics, but they were very creative. They were very loving. I think I was the most important thing in the world to them. And I always knew they were a little different.
And your world growing up was full of colorful, interesting people, and they brought you everywhere with them.
Yeah, I had a wonderful childhood because I was growing up in Miami, which was kind of rural at the time. So it was sort of like a paradise with all these, you know, tropical plants and birds. But on the other hand, they let me play, but they treated me like an adult. They always sort of talked to me. They didn't beat me. They didn't talk down to me. So it was a very different kind of upbringing.
And your parents had met and married under what other people might consider strained circumstances, but unquestionably were very much in love at the beginning.
Very much so. I think that my mom loved, you know, she grew up in the Depression, and she grew up sort of, her escape was the movies. So she loved glamour, and my father's life was very glamorous. He was an interior decorator. He had worked in Hollywood for Charlie Chaplin. And you don't meet guys like that every once in a while, so I guess he sort of swept her off her feet.
And you write that your dad was the only straight decorator in Miami at the time and perhaps anywhere in the world.
It may be.
but they were still very open. They had a lot of gay friends and really didn't make distinctions about people based on what they were like.
No, I think it was a very creative environment. And I think what they valued most in people was talent. If you were talented, any other aspect of your personality sort of went by the wayside. If you were talented, you were a premium candidate for friendship in their circle.
What kinds of clients did your father have?
He had, his decorating business in Miami in the 50s and 60s was sort of a difficult situation because back then Miami wasn't the sort of international cosmopolitan city it is today. So a lot of his clients were, you know, people with offshore bank accounts. But he worked for the president of Cuba, Carlos Prio. He did the presidential palace in Haiti. He worked for Walt Disney, for Dean Martin, Jack Dempsey, the fighter. The list kind of goes, Jackie Gleason, list kind of just goes on.
Well, it's interesting that you say he did the presidential palace in Haiti and you just make that part of the list because that was quite an extraordinary experience for him.
Yeah, what happened was they I think in the early 50s, the guy in charge, the dictator in charge at the time, was President Paul Magoire. And they called him and they said, Vice President Nixon's coming to visit to review the troops. And we just need the public room spruced up a bit. So they put my father on a plane the next day. And my mom sent down, you know, everything from pins, tape measures, to brocade fabric, everything he needed. And he did the job in record time. What they didn't tell him was they had hired someone before my father, and this guy didn't get the job done on time, and he sort of disappeared. They have no idea what happened to him, but he's gone. So then they're having a celebratory dinner, and the wife of the president says, gee, this is so great. We'd love you to stay and do the whole palace. He said, that's lovely. That's great. I got to get back to my wife and kid. Boom, the SWAT team comes out. They have machine guns on my father, and they say, you're not leaving, sorry. At which point he was under house arrest for about 6 months until he did the whole palace. He never got paid. When he left, the president shook his hand and gave him a paperweight, which actually I still have, with the picture of the president, and said thank you, and off he went. But he was happy to get home, and home alive, I guess.
What were your mom and dad like as a professional team?
They were great. You know, my father lived in the world of the imagination, and you know, he just, oh, his imagination was so rich. And my mom was very, very practical, but loved style. So, you know, a client comes in, and my father's proposing something, and my mom could see that the client's hesitating here and there. And she'd go up and she'd, you know, what about doing the whole house in black and red? It would be divine. And she would sell them on the idea, and boom, you know, there was another client. And my mom was so beautiful and so incandescent. She would just light up a room. So when they went to, you know, parties together or social functions, she was just the center of attention. It was a great partnership.
So early on, Philip, your dad was working in the decorating business, but he started to get interested in, you know, homeopathic healing and macrobiotic diets. And you write about wanting a shot like every other kid when you got sick.
Yeah, I wanted to be, because if I got sick, I didn't go to the doctor. I mean, I'm 5 years old, and everyone at school has gotten a lollipop for their penicillin shot, and that was not allowed. So my father would just go and get me this homeopathic medicine. And very interesting, he was very interested in alternative anything. He loved Eastern philosophy. And when I was writing the book, I found a diary of his. I have to look it up. I think it was 1921, 1925. And in that diary, he's recording all his dreams, which is kind of unusual. And then there's a dream where he dreams of a freight train crash, I think, in the desert. And I think he sees flames in the dream. The next morning, he wakes up, and the front page of the newspaper talks about this freight train crash. So he never said anything about it again in the diary, but clearly he was beginning to have some sort of, you know, supernatural or psychic abilities, you know, back when he was 20 years old.
Yeah, and then when you were, I guess, in about junior high school, your father literally woke up one day and discovered that he could heal people.
Yeah, it was, there were two incidents, basically. He was going to sort of a meditation group in the early 60s, and he would go, and there'd be like 10 people, and they would experiment with ESP and all this stuff, and every time he would fall asleep, and people would make fun of him, and he'd sleep through the whole session. And then one day he woke up, and everybody in the group looked at him, and somehow they commented he was a different person now. And someone, I think, just had a chest cold or something pretty benign, and they said, "Lou, why don't you try and heal us? I think you're a healer now." And he did, and they felt better. But about a week later, the real turning point was he went to a lecture by this guy named Arthur Ford, who was a very famous medium. Arthur used to hold, like, seances, read people's minds at Carnegie Hall. I think his clients were like the King of Greece, Gloria Swanson, Aldous Huxley. And my father went to a lecture, and he's looking around for a seat because it's packed. And a woman motions him over, and he thinks, oh, she's got a seat. And she whispers to him, "I see in your aura you're a healer. I have a really bad cold. Please put your hands on my shoulder." My father's thinking, oh, you know, whatever. And he puts his hands on her shoulder, and he feels them heat up. And then they, like a thermostat, they sort of cool down. And she turns to him, she says, "Thank you. I'm so much better." This same incident happened two more times. He's looking for a seat. Another woman motions him over, and she had cancer. And she said, "I know you're a healer. I need you, please, I need your energy." And he said, "No, you know, I'm sorry you have cancer, but no, I can't do that." She says, "Yes, you can." And the same thing happened where he put his hands on, and boom, overnight, he's now a healer. And he was just fascinated by what was happening to him. It's like someone turned on a switch.
Where did he believe that ability came from?
He believes we all have it, and it's innate. That basically, you know, the problem is we as humans have, we think we're a piece of machinery, like, you know, that we're like an electric can opener that can be fixed, or a car that needs new, you know, new hoses when they explode. But in fact, we're this bundle of miraculous energy. The body is just this sort of, you know, paper bag we walk in around that carries around our energy and our spirit. So he feels we all have it. It's just buried in a lot of people, or it's not been discovered, or, you know, they turn it off. You know, we all hear stories about kids who say things that, you know, if you really listen to them, they're very psychic. But, you know, we sort of beat it out of everybody, and the culture doesn't reward those kinds of intuitive hunches.
Did he try to share his gifts in any kind of traditional religious setting?
Yes. He would hold healing circles at several churches in Miami. Even though he was born and raised Jewish, there would be Unitarian churches or Science of Mind churches, and he would hold healing groups and, you know, try and teach people how to heal, absolutely.
Philip Smith is my guest. He's an artist and former managing editor of GQ magazine. His new memoir about growing up with a psychic father is called Walking Through Walls. We'll return to our discussion with Philip in just a moment. You can join us there by calling 1-800-933-5372. If you would like to have a copy of Philip's book and also support KERA at the $120 level, we'd love for you to also call 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online to kera.org, click the support page, and you can find the thank you gifts and scroll down to the book if you'd like to have it. Jeff Whittington is here again, senior producer of Think. Jeff, this is turning out to be a very interesting interview. The book is fascinating.
Absolutely. And apparently, as you told me, there are even further, like we had in the first show, even further Warhol tie-ins on this topic as well.
Yes, we'll try to get around to those. Yeah, Philip Smith knew Andy Warhol quite well and has some stories relating to Andy Warhol and his dad, and we'll try to get to those.
Well, it's a lot of fun all the way around today. Both hours, really interesting. If you're getting something out of this, if you get something out of this show, you know what? Even if you don't get anything out of the show and you just happen to be listening right now, but you listen to KERA all the time, if your favorite show is a different show, that's fine too. We just want you to get involved in what is turning out to be quite a winning membership campaign at 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
Sometimes I feel like Soupy Sales. Remember he like told kids all over America to send him a dollar, and kids did. Of course, you're all adults and have access to the money yourselves, but it's now I'm going the wrong way.
We did get an email the other day in the Think inbox that said, "Hi, I'm just a kid and don't have my own credit card. Otherwise, I would pledge."
Well, that's nice.
So, you know, and it was obviously from a parent's, like it was the signature, the email address was a mom and dad's name, it looked like. So, you know, the kids are listening, and that's great. We're thrilled to have you. You know, we were this morning, Jeff Ramirez and I were encouraging kids in the back seat on the way to school to ask their parents why they haven't pledged yet. I don't know how it turned out, but it looked like it turned out pretty well
because we've
done really well today, and we're still waiting to hear from you at 1-800-456-KERA.
You can also go to kera.org and do this whole thing online, including choosing your thank you gift or setting up a sustaining membership. We want to thank those of you who are calling, Richard Hazlett in Irving, Jackie in Tyler, Susan Livingston in Dallas, Ann Campbell in Dallas, Gwen in Dallas. We are raising money quickly, thanks to you.
$113,700 left in the whole campaign. Started, today's the 11th day. We started a couple of Fridays ago with a power hour looking to raise $500,000 for KERA, and we've made fantastic progress. The goal really has been all along to try to do it by the end of September, which in public radio land is tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And we've got a challenge grant on the table of $2,750 to do it by 7 p.m. tomorrow. So your call right now or your online pledge right now will help us get that much closer to the overall goal. Really, Chris, $13,700 away from that $400,000 raise mark, a huge milestone in this campaign.
We owe our existence here to you. You recognize the value of public radio and you make a contribution. The number is 1-800-456-5372. The online place to go is kera.org and then click support. Public radio is here because people just like you listen to it and decide it needs to be part of our community.
It's worth it. And when you join at the $120 membership level at 1-800-456-5372, we can thank you with your very own copy of Philip Smith's book, Walking Through Walls. It's very easy to do. It just takes a couple of minutes. The number to call, 1-800-456-5372, or go online to kera.org and make your gift there. Thanks.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Philip Smith is my guest. His new memoir of growing up with a psychic father is called Walking Through Walls. We have it available as a thank you gift today when you join KERA with a $120 contribution or above. The number is 1-800-456-5372. If you want to talk to Philip or ask him a question, that number is 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. So, Philip, your mother was already sort of coping with your father's interest in alternative everything, as you describe it. How did she handle it when he came home and said, I think I have these amazing powers?
You know, I think she was sort of okay with it for a while, but she was very supportive of him. She really loved him. She admired his creativity. She loved his free spirit. But I think it became like being married to an emergency room surgeon or physician, where people called day and night, day and night, day and night. It was just constant. You know, people would come to the house and bang on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning. They were sick. Their kid was sick. They would call at, you know, 6 in the morning. It was just nonstop. And suddenly this tsunami of people started taking over his life. And he was certainly fascinated, like, wow, look what I can do. I mean, I touched this person and they can actually, their eyes cleared up. And it was like a new toy for him. It was such an adventure. But I think it just overwhelmed him and sort of overwhelmed all of us. And by necessity, the marriage, they had to separate. They ended up, of course, living next door to each other, but they had to really separate.
So meanwhile, you're this teenage kid and you've got all this going on, and then you show up at school every day in suburban Miami and are trying your very best to just blend in with everybody else.
Yeah, that was a full-time job, because I grew up with eccentric parents. I wasn't exactly a model of normalcy, but this new adventure certainly added a whole kink in the thing. And I just went to school and just kept my lips sealed because I was so afraid that, you know, the police would come after us or the FDA, the people, you know, my father was harassed a lot by the police. And I just didn't want to invite any more trouble to the house.
He was harassed because he was giving out homeopathic medications and they felt like maybe this was some kind of illicit drug.
Yeah, you know, back then, which is, you know, almost 50 years ago, there was no real homeopathy in this country. You had to buy it from England. And a lot of times he would then go down to the docks in Miami, you know, to pick it up through customs. And they would say, you know, what kind of drugs are these? And my father would patiently explain, it's not drugs, it's homeopathic medicine. And they would, you know, they would sort of plea bargain and they'd throw it out, destroy it, or sometimes they'd threaten to arrest him. And then there were times we were driving home once he really had this ability to heal people, and he'd see a car wreck, and he'd pull over to the side of the road, and he'd go over and try and help the people that were injured. And the cops would come over and rough him up or you know, arrest him because they'd accuse him of maybe pickpocketing the guy, or he'd go into a hospital, and he'd be doing a laying on of hands of someone, and they'd call security, and they'd threaten to arrest him for practicing medicine without a license. So to go back to your original question, I heard these stories, I saw these things happen, and I didn't want to bring any more trouble home. So, you know, I just became this spanking clean kid on the outside world.
How did money play into all this for your dad?
He never, ever charged for a single healing. He felt it was God's gift. I guess the spirits told him to retire from business, and he was very nervous, but he had a small little warehouse where he ran his design studio, and he rented it out. He lived basically just above the poverty level for the rest of his life and just decided that his job was to help people.
One of the really interesting things about your story, and the thing that I find really charming, is that so when you're a teenager, all this crazy stuff is going on, and you think, I need to see a shrink because I'm having trouble coping. And it never occurred to you that there might be anything wrong with your father. You just figured you needed to sort of figure out how to live with a guy like this.
Yeah. I didn't think that. I thought it was sort of my problem, and that, you know, I needed to talk to someone because I had best friends, but I didn't have a best friend I confided in, that, you know, my father's doing this supernatural stuff, and, you know, a woman came over and she had leukemia the other day, or her baby couldn't see, and now they went home and they're okay. You know, so I needed someone to talk to, and at that point I knew that there was a girl, a classmate of mine at school, whose father was a shrink. So I thought, you know, I'll go see him. But And then I didn't realize that this stuff cost a lot of money. So I went to see my father that night. I said, you know, Dad, Pop, I need to go to see a shrink. And he said, why? I said, well, I can't tell you. And, of course, that's a big mistake because my father could read my mind instantly. So, and he had these spirit guides who would come in and give him messages. And I said, you know, he says, you can tell me. I said, no, I don't want to talk about it. I just need the money. And all of a sudden the lights blinked three times, boom, boom, boom. And that was the signal from Arthur Ford that he was coming in to talk to my father. And the lights would blink in Denny's or in the movie theater. We're driving on the highway at night, boom, 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 the lights. And my father would pull over and say, oh, Arthur has a message for me, and take out a pen and paper and write it down. So my father, I'm sitting there telling him about, I got to go see the shrink, and I just want someone to talk to and tell me it's okay to have these floating spirits around the house. And my father takes all this dictation from Arthur and turns to me and says, you're going to go see, you know, Dr. X. This is his address. This is his phone number. I don't think you should go. This is not a good thing for you. And so I had no privacy as a kid. He was constantly, you know, he was in my mind. I mean, the expression in your face doesn't even compare.
Yeah, there's so many people who will hear a story like this and think it's got to be a parlor trick. It's got to be a guy who believed he was right, but you know, it's all just the power of the mind. How have you come to reconcile your, as far as I can tell, you absolutely believe in your father's gifts?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, aside from it being my father, I think when you grow up as a kid, whatever your father does or your mother, you know, you accept that this is what they do, and they're your parent, and they're your, you know, bigger person that's watching over you. But more importantly, when I wrote the book, which took me 8 years, my father left behind enormous archives, hundreds and hundreds of hours of audio tapes. He would tape his healings. He would tape his lectures. He would tape his classes. There's over 5,000 pages of this spirit dictation from the spirits. There are thousands of letters that people wrote after my father healed them, and it was like an archaeological dig. You start to look through this stuff, and you say, holy cow, I mean, it's not one or two people here that could be, you know, maybe lunatics. It's thousands of people, and from all over the place, and all kinds of things. I mean, as I said, something from leukemia, or one of the things he did, people would come to him one leg shorter than the other, and he was able to, just in a matter of minutes, hold their ankles out, and suddenly their legs would become even, and they walk out of there, you know, in the first time in their life with even legs. And a lot of these letters I posted on the website so people who didn't believe this and or had said, oh, my God, this is impossible, could actually go and read these letters and read the newspaper articles when the newspaper would report on him about these things. Because if someone told me this story, believe me, I'd be rolling my eyes too.
Philip, do you think he ever felt like it was a burden to have this gift?
My father?
Yeah.
That's an interesting question, one I haven't been asked. I would say no. I think he really wanted to help people, and he really firmly believed what he did, and he saw the results, and I think it took a lot out of him, but he just gave because he felt that it was important work that he was doing.
When your father died, it came as such a shock to you because you had sort of felt as if he was above this. He was 77 years old, but you were stunned to get the news.
Yeah, because I had seen him the week before, and he was fine. And my father just didn't get sick. It just didn't happen. And he died under pretty mysterious circumstances, which I think were, you know, beyond sort of anybody's control. He had someone staying in his house, and there was never any medication in his house. There was some bottles of vitamins, but no pharmaceuticals. And I got this call that my father had died from this woman, and I flew down the next day, and I found this bottle of her medicine, and it had been filled the day before with 100 pills. And when I opened it, there were 3 pills left. And I looked it up in the PDR, and it said basically that this could induce, you know, a heart attack. And it was just a basic thyroid medication, but anybody who was predisposed. And no, I didn't know. I was always puzzled by it. And then 10 years later, I went to basically to have my cards done, because every year on my birthday, I would go and have a reading just as a kind of tune-up. And this guy I went to was a very famous medium, and he just looked at me. He said, you know, your father didn't have to die. It was an accident. He got up. He was napping, and he went in the kitchen. He was half asleep, and he grabbed this bottle that he thought were his vitamins, and he sort of took it, and it induced this massive heart attack.
And was after that, sort of, you had a, what you feel like was a communication from your father?
Yeah, well, I've had many and continue to do so. The first one I had was basically about 3 months after he passed away. I went to India because I sort of felt I needed that spiritual connection, and also I was sort of doing the trip for him. I knew it was a trip he always wanted to make, and I went to see the Taj Mahal at full moon, which you need special government clearance, and it was an amazing sight. And the guide said to me, now that you've seen the Taj at full moon, you're going to have a very special dream, and someone will communicate with you. And that night I had a dream that my father, the phone rang. It was an old-fashioned phone. I picked it up, and it was my father saying, I'm okay. I have a lot of friends. Everything's fine. Don't worry about me. There's been some other incidences where photographs of his have that I couldn't find and I never saw in my lifetime have suddenly appeared in books belonging to my mother that she bought at a garage sale. So, yes, he shows up.
Philip Smith is my guest. He's an artist and former managing editor of GQ magazine. His new memoir of growing up with a psychic father is called Walking Through Walls. We'll return to our discussion with Philip in just a moment. You can talk to him by calling 1-800-933-5372. We would also ask that you, if you are not a member right now of KERA, or if you would like to make an additional gift of support or renew a membership, that you call 1-800-456-5372. Lots of people, Jeff Whittington, are doing this today.
Yes, they are. Thank you so much to each and every one of you who has joined the station. Alan Murray and Grapevine is among those. John Nelson and Tyler as well. Also, Maria Eschelmeyer and Anna has called or joined online. Brooks Conover in Cleburne. Thanks, Brooks. And Sue Mottinger in Dallas. All over the listening area, Chris. About $112,800 left to raise in the whole drive. And we know that lots of you like to wait until the last day or so. Go ahead and do it today. Because we could ostensibly wrap this thing up midday tomorrow, maybe even tomorrow morning, maybe, if we get your participation right now, and then we can just get right back to the regular schedule, and you won't hear from us again this year.
Yeah, we're down to, you know, less than $1,120 pledges. And if you think of how many people are listening, how many of you out there have not yet made the call, we could knock that out right away. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can get a copy if you would be interested in Philip Smith's memoir, Walking Through Walls. That's at the $120 level. Or maybe you would like to have the radio bookmark.
It is the new gizmo, this membership campaign. It's a little keychain fob type, you know, it's sort of like the car alarm thing on your keychain. And when you're listening to the show, this show, or any show on KERA, you just click it if you want to listen to the rest of it or listen to the first part of it or listen to it again later. And then later on, you pop it into the USB port on your computer and it finds the audio for you.
That's cool. And then you can delete them so that you can do this sort of thousands of times.
Yeah, it holds 250 bookmarks. It's called the radio bookmark. It holds 250 bookmarks at a time. It's available at the $120 membership level.
1-800-456-5372 is the number. Of course, you've heard us say this. Our goal was to get this drive over by the end of October so that we could spend the entire month of October and a couple days in November giving you uninterrupted coverage, especially as events are so important right now in choosing the next president of the United States. We would love to be finished with fundraising.
There's going to be all kinds of stuff that you're going to be able to hear right here on KERA, beginning with the vice presidential debate on Thursday evening. And, you know, the other two debates, we'll have special coverage of the campaign with our familiar panel in mid-October as we get within 3 weeks or so of Election Day. It's an exciting time, and I think it was a pretty smart decision for the powers that be here to move this drive up almost a month to be able to get it over with in September. Obviously, many of you agree. Many, many, many of you. And thank you so much to each and every one of you has called 1-800-456-5372 or have gone online to KERA.org. I'm trying to get my subject verb agreement right this afternoon. It's been a long day.
It's tricky when you're being extemporaneous.
Yes, but many of you have done it, and thank you so much. But we're still waiting to hear from you. We really are still waiting to hear from you.
As a loyal KERA listener, you already know what your personal testimonial would say if you wanted to talk about why you love public radio and what makes it different from other kinds of media that are available in this market. You know why you listen. You know the quality of the information, the content, the way stories and subjects are approached. It's just different. And we're also different in the way that we raise the money necessary to keep operating. Instead of selling commercial airtime, we go directly to you and we sell your own time right back to you. When you make a contribution at 1-800-456-5372, you help to keep KERA independent and strong.
Well, we don't have to sell you the product because you already listen to the station. You're listening right now, for crying out loud. So why not just take that next step? It's an easy step. You've already taken the first step, really. You found KERA. You've found public radio. It resonates somehow with you. You get something out of it, and you can have it. It's yours. It's absolutely free. But our task is to try to get you to help pay for it, $60 at a time, $120 at a time. How about $240 for your annual contribution? That's just $20 a month when you spread it out over the year, either literally as a sustaining member of the station or figuratively. Just think of it as a $20 a month contribution and pay it all at once on your credit or debit card. It's so easy for you to do, but you have to call 1-800-800-456-5372. 5372 or go online at KERA.org to do it.
I have to tell you, a conversation with a friend recently made me look at my own sort of charitable giving and reassess what I was able to do. It may be that you joined, 10 years ago, at which time, $60 a year or $120 a year was what you could do. Maybe you're at a different place now and you're, able to make a $1,500 contribution, become a Friends member. Sometimes we get in this kind of a rut of thinking, well, this is how much I give KERA every year. And maybe you're really now able to give more and you would like to change the amount that you've given. So consider that. Consider making KERA a bigger part of your portfolio of charitable causes and know that you will benefit directly from what you have purchased. 1-800-456-5372 is the number.
You're already benefiting directly from the programming. You use it, you listen to it, you expect the station to be here when you turn on the radio. So why not just take that next step? You know what's right for you. You know that KERA is right for you. You've been listening. So why not join? 1-800-456-5372.
We have American Airlines miles at many different pledge levels, starting at $120. At $240, you get 1,000 miles. At $360, you get 2,000 miles. At that Friends level, you get 7,500 American Airlines miles, plus Friends benefits, which is terrific. So please give us a call, 1-800-456-5372, or go to KERA.org.
Think is made possible by SMU's Master of Liberal Studies program, offering flexible part-time graduate study. You can follow your passion at SMU and learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA.org and on KERA 90.1 as well. My name is Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Philip Smith. His new memoir is called Walking Through Walls. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@KERA.org. Philip, after your dad died, there was a time when you felt like maybe you needed to sort of take up the mantle and help some of the people that he had worked with. Were you hoping throughout your childhood and your young adulthood that you would have a similar gift?
That's a very tricky question. My father taught me a lot, really wanted me to sort of be his successor. I just looked around and I thought, ooh, I don't want this responsibility of taking care of all these sick people. It was never endless stream. And my father said, look, this is the greatest thing you can ever do with your life is to be of service to people. But I made a decision when he died not to do it. But I think that some of his teachings, I would say, come through in my paintings. And I'm hoping that people, when they look at my paintings, that they do receive some, positive input to their lives through the paintings. And I certainly try and help people a lot whenever I can. And I know that I helped my mom a lot in ways that I don't think she knew, that I used some things my father taught me. But no, I've never sort of tried it on other people.
Are you bothered by the bias that people have? People who are very tolerant of different systems of spirituality very often draw the line at anything that's sort of supernatural with regard to things like ESP and psychic healing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that prejudice now, or have you learned to just shake it off?
No, I think it's actually very much alive. It's interesting that I did some Christian radio the other day, and the woman said to me right off the bat, you know, I didn't want to have you on my show because anything supernatural spooks me out. And I said, you know, Christ had a healing ministry. He was a healer. The original church was a healer. And sometimes, you know, there are people around the world that have this gift or have been able to use these abilities, and it has nothing to do with religion. It's basically God's work helping other people. And I do think that, you know, I think the idea is that maybe, you know, anything that we can't see and touch is the work of the devil is kind of silly, because it goes back to my father's original idea that we're just this bundle of miraculous energy.
You have written elsewhere, though, outside the book, that when your dad died, you felt the need to find a synagogue to say the Kaddish mourner's prayer.
Yeah, I felt that in honor of him, and he was Jewish, that in the first year of his death, I needed to respect, you know, the religion in which he was born into. And I also felt it was part of my, you know, evolution as an adult. It's a symbolic and ritualistic moment where you say your first prayer for your dead father. And so, yes, I very much wanted to do that.
Philip Smith is my guest. His memoir is called Walking Through Walls. Let's speak to Don in Garland. Hi, Don.
Thanks for taking my call, Chris.
Sure.
I wanted to ask a couple of quick questions of Mr. Smith.
Sure. Hi, Don.
Have you done any studies or research into the life of Edgar Cayce? And the second question is what is your website?
Edgar Cayce, my father read all his books and was actually, you'll see in the book, was very good friends with Edgar's son, Hewlin Cayce, who used to come in winter at our house. So I'm certainly very familiar. My father, since I was like 6 or 7 years old, used to talk to me about Edgar Cayce. And I think that in a way this was a role model for my father. He was very impressed with the idea that Cayce could tap into some sort of invisible energy and information and come back with cures that could help people. And I think this was something that got him going, that this was the direction he wanted to go into. And if you think about, I mean, when my father was alive, there was no such thing as the Internet. And now you can type in, you know, fibromyalgia or you know, migraine headaches, and all of a sudden you get information. And I don't know where that information is coming from. I know it's coming from a server somewhere, but it's all invisible to me. And I think that basically if you take that kind of model, my father was sort of doing the same thing. This information is somewhere, and he was able to tap into it. The website is very easy. It's called www.walkingthroughwallsthebook.com. And you can go, you can see some of my father's healing tools there. As I said, there's letters from his, let's call them patients, or the people he healed. There's some of the spirit dictation that he took. There's pictures of you know, the president of Cuba and Haiti that he worked with. So it's kind of a little bit of a museum to him.
During the first hour of the program today, Philip, we were talking about Andy Warhol, and you have some great stories about Warhol in your book, including the way that he responded to your father and his gifts. Can you talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, I became friendly with Warhol because I was doing an article on him, and I don't know, I would just go up there to the factory once in a while and say hello, and I'm a painter, and you know, I loved meeting him. He was sort of my hero because he had really changed the direction of art. And at some point I started telling him about my father, and he, at first he thought it was very, very funny. He thought, wow, a decorator who heals people. He said, what a great story. But, he started taking it very seriously because I think Warhol started moving into areas after he was shot. He wanted to be very concerned about his own health and started eating healthy and was really interested in this stuff. And right after my father died, I was in New York, and I went up to see him. And Andy asked how my father was. And I said, well, you know, he passed away recently. And there was just this silence. And Andy would always stutter a little bit and said, but I thought he was magic. And it was a very, I don't know, poetic way of expressing that my father did have these magical abilities, and it was a very nice sentiment.
Do you think there's an element of psychic gift required for all good art?
Yeah, I would like to think so, yeah. I think that basically you think about Thomas Edison or people who invent things. It's not, I'm going to sound a little wacky here. I don't believe that it's just someone with more brain cells that's inventing the light bulb or contact lenses or the photocopy machine. I think somehow these ideas come from another dimension and people are able to tune into it. And I think great art, which is really meant to address the soul in a way, does come from another dimension. In Tibetan Buddhism, they make these paintings called Tibetan Tankas, which are pictures of Buddhas in various positions and stages of his life. But the real purpose of these Tibetan Tankas is to give a kind of blessing or insight or enlightenment to the viewer. And they're imbued with, I would say, metaphysical properties when the intention of the artist is to make these things happen. So I think great art that you look at through the centuries and still moves people, it's sort of beyond, you know, human capabilities in a way.
How open are you today to people who you meet who tell you that they have psychic abilities?
I don't know a lot of people who do that, and I think that this is going to sound horrible. I'm a little bit spoiled because I think my father had really phenomenal abilities, and the people I have met have good abilities, but I feel that they didn't really have the breadth and the uniqueness of what my father had. But I'm sure there's very, very talented psychics and healers out there.
When you talk about your art, and you say that a lot of what your father possessed and the way he influenced your life sort of changes it, can you talk a little bit about what your style is like? I know that the Dallas Museum of Art owns at least one of your pieces.
Yeah. I guess the easiest way to... they're like hieroglyphs, and I sort of enter a little bit of a, if I can be so bold to say, a little bit of a dream state or a trance state when I'm working, and I draw these images into paint, and I'm not really sure what's going on when it's all happening. And then I come out, and there's this very rich, tangled web of images that tell a story, and I liken it to a dream, and people respond to them. And I feel that I don't take making art lightly. I don't go in there to bang out another painting. It really has to come from a very good place. And, you know, if one day I know someone said to me, I was upset and angry about something, and they said, put it in your work. I said, no, that's not the place for that. So I do draw lines. I just don't throw everything into my work.
Philip Smith is an artist and former managing editor of GQ magazine. His new memoir is called Walking Through Walls. Philip, such an interesting story. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Oh, it was a pleasure. I really appreciate it. And good luck on your fundraising because it's a good cause.
Thank you so much. Okay. We have copies of Philip Smith's book available if you'd like to read Walking Through Walls. It's a thank you gift. That means we send it to you as a little bonus when you become a member at the $120 level or above.
Yes, and of course, as I always say, I just like to make the disclaimer.
This is Jeff Williamson here.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. The book is available out there in the retail world. We're not going to lie to you. We're not asking you to pay $120 for a book. We're asking you to support KERA. And many of you choose, you know what, we choose the $120 level because it's kind of, it's around the, you know, the average pledge, the average membership. It's $10 a month. It makes it easy. And that's the level that this book is available at. Of course, you know, you can go get a copy of the book and you can join at the $60 level, or you can go get a copy of the book at the store and you can join at the $500 level. We just ask that you join. You're already getting the service, you use the service, and it's really hard, especially when we get into today being, you know, like the 11th day of the drive. Our challenge is to get you to pay for something that you're already getting for free and that's really good. And it's kind of like the whole cable TV thing. You know, you move into a new place and the cable's already connected. And do you call them and say, hey, I'd like to start paying for this? Well, we'd like you to start paying for this. And you can do it at 1-800-456-5372.
Of course, when the cable company leaves things on, that's an accident. We're deliberately out there for
right.
everyone. But we recognize that the vast majority of you listening can afford to make a contribution, and very many of you do choose to make a contribution. It's always it's great to us because, of course, we can't force you. You know, we won't be able to reprogram your radio to not receive KERA. We want it to be out there. But we would ask that you look honestly at your ability to be a contributor. And look, if you want to become a Friends member at $1,500 or above, great. If you want to start with an introductory membership, that's fine as well. You make the decision about how much money to contribute. But consider how much public radio gives to your life.
1-800-456-5372 is the number to call. The online place is KERA.org. Sorry if I jumped.
No, I'm glad you jumped.
Here. Okay. It's been a long day, Chris. And we've made some great progress today on this long day. And there's still more to come, more great public radio to come. Maybe your favorite programs are in the afternoon. Maybe you love day to day. Maybe you love the world or All Things Considered. I listen to those shows. I listen all day long just like you do. And I can't wait till the drive is over so that I can hear all of my favorite programs without interruption. If you agree and you can sympathize with that sentiment, then why not join right now? Because the sooner you do, the sooner we'll reach the goal and the sooner the drive will end and we'll get back to the regular schedule.
I would say that the only thing that the employees here like about the fundraising drive, other than the fact that we know that we're making the budget so we can continue doing the work that we love, is that they bring us fancy coffee during the membership drive, and that's always nice.
Oh, really?
You don't drink it?
No, this is news to me.
It's there in the break room. 1-800-456-5372. Or you can go to KERA.org.
That's for our cherished volunteers, Chris.
Oh, yeah. I'm busted now.
1-800-456-KERA. Online at KERA.org. Maybe you heard an interview last week with someone like, I don't know, let's see, who do we have last week? We had Alan Alda on. He had a book that he was talking about. Which is really interesting. It was a great conversation. That book is still available. As a matter of fact, any of the thank you gifts you've heard about during the membership campaign are likely still available, unless it's a limited ticket offer or something like that. So, call the volunteer, 1-800-456-5372, and they've got this whole notebook of things that they can thumb through and find exactly what it was that you really wanted. Really, we'll do almost whatever it takes to get your participation, especially today when we can wrap this thing up by tomorrow.
That's right. It is simple to call. It doesn't take a very long time. If you don't feel like talking to a human at all, you can do this online. Remember that, you know, we say often that you can pay with a credit card. That also includes, you know, if you just have a debit card, most debit cards also work on our website, and it's simple to do. If you really like to do things by sending a paper check in, we can arrange that as well. That's one of the least common ways now that people fulfill their memberships, but it's certainly still an option for you. You can decide whatever amount you want to pay. 1-800-456-5372 is the number, or you can go to KERA.org. Membership, more than anything, is something that means that you're contributing to something that matters to you.
And something that you think matters to the whole community. Think about the first time you found public radio. Maybe you were a teen. Maybe you are, you know, maybe you it was recently. Maybe you were, but, you know, in the middle of your life or just starting out as a professional. But you found public radio. Maybe it wasn't even KERA. Maybe it was New York or Chicago or L.A. But you're here. You listen to public radio right here on KERA in Dallas. And we're asking you to remember what it did for you when you first found public radio. Obviously, it resonates with you. It speaks to something in you, and you get something out of it. So we're just asking you to make a little return gift to say, you know what, I do appreciate KERA. I do appreciate what I get, and I want to help them raise the last $112,300 in the membership campaign. I'm going to make my gift of support right now.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. The website is KERA.org. There should be a big, giant, prominent word, support, and you click on that, and it'll take you where you need to go. Thanks to Aaron Stessel in Flower Mound, Amy Martin in Dallas, and everyone who is on the line right now, or perhaps on the phone or online, 1-800-456-5372 or KERA.org.
Don't just wait for someone else to pay for this. You know, this station exists because over the years, many, many people have contributed. Many thousands of people have gone online to KERA.org or called 1-800-456-5372 and made a pledge of support, become members of the station. Now, those people are looking to you. It's time for you to take up sort of the cause and help make public radio a reality.
This is your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and online at kera.org. Public radio is different from other kinds of commercial radio, from commercial radio, period. We don't sell advertisements. We come directly to you. You may not love it, but it's an honest way to raise the money we need, and we do make the promise that as soon as we fulfill our budget needs, we will stop fundraising for this drive.
And I actually once in the past added up the approximate number of minutes we spend fundraising during the membership campaigns.
Far less than commercials.
Over a year, it's far, far, remarkably fewer minutes over a year than a commercial radio station with a 17 to 21 minute, 21 minutes per hour of commercials.
Revenue space.
Yeah, exactly.
So give us a call now, please. 1-800-456-5372 or go to that website, kera.org. Talk to the volunteers about thank you gifts or check them out online or just make your entire contribution go to programming. The choice is yours, but we would love to hear from you. Thanks.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. The House has narrowly rejected the sweeping $700 billion financial rescue plan aimed at restoring the flow of credit in the U.S. economy.
On this vote, the yeas are 205, the nays are 228. The motion is not adopted.
Republican congressmen voted more than 2-1 against the bill, despite the support of President Bush and GOP leaders, but House GOP leader John Boehner blames House Speaker Nancy Pelosi for the defeat.
I think that we need to renew our efforts to find a solution that Congress can support. I do believe that we could have gotten there today had it not been for this partisan speech that the Speaker gave on the floor of the House. I mean, we've put everything we had into getting the votes to get there today. But the Speaker had to give a partisan voice that poisoned our conference, caused a number of members that we thought we could get to go south.
Democratic presidential nominee Barack Obama says he's confident Congress will eventually pass a rescue plan, but he added that the path is going to be rocky. The defeat of the plan triggered a sharp sell-off on Wall Street, with the Dow Industrials down at one point more than 700 points before rebounding. NPR's business reporter Frank Langford joins us with the latest.
Well, you know, Craig, the bailout plan was designed in part to calm the market. It was supposed to restore investor confidence. And the failure so far has sort of had the opposite effect, especially after the leadership agreed yesterday that they would be able to push this through. So it's made investors a lot more nervous. And as you know, markets hate uncertainty. So without a bailout plan at the moment, it's not clear how the U.S. goes forward and fixes this crisis.
Well, Frank, the market was down even before this vote. So if a rescue plan does pass, will that be enough to stabilize the market?
Well, there's still more problems out there. We've seen the financial crisis seems to be spreading to Europe. Just recently, we've had European governments stepping in to rescue three banks.
Thanks. NPR's Frank Langford reporting from Washington. An Israeli official says the U.S. has deployed an advanced radar system in Israel, which could help in Israel's defense against a potential Iranian missile attack. The system will be operated, at least initially, by a U.S. crew. Linda Gradstein has the story.
The American radar system is meant to allow early detection of incoming ballistic missiles. No official announcement was made in Jerusalem or Washington about the deployment of the system in Israel's Negev desert, but an Israeli official confirmed a report in Defense News that the radar system had been flown to Israel over the past week. Israel has been growing increasingly concerned about Iran's nuclear program. Iran says it is only for civilian use, but Israel and the Bush administration believe Iran hopes to build a nuclear bomb. For NPR News, I'm Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Industrials are now down 539 points. The Nasdaq Composite is down as well. This is NPR News from Washington.
Time is 2:04. You're listening to Day to Day on KERA. I'm Scott Murray with the membership department here at KERA, joined by Brandilyn Barnett, who is our assistant producer for Think and Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hello, Brandilyn.
Hi, Scott.
And we're doing very well today. We are really counting down the end of the fall membership campaign, which is the last one of the year. So we're inviting you to call 1-800-456-5372. 5372 or online at kera.org, because we have a really good opportunity to wrap this drive up before tomorrow, but we have to hear from folks right now.
That's right. We are trying to get it done. Our goal was to end the drive before October, and we can do it.
We
know that there are people out there who have yet to make a contribution to KERA, and now it's time for you to step up and help us to get this drive done. You can do that by calling 1-800-456-5372 and support the great content that you have come to know and love right here on KERA 90.1.
Absolutely, and we've really got a great opportunity. If you haven't had a chance to call in and support the great news and information you get every day on KERA, whether it be from Morning Edition, All Things Considered, or being able to turn in the middle of the day to day in the world, every contribution that comes in during this drive helps pay for that. It's coming up next because someone has contributed, and that's how we're able to put it on the air. And this is our last drive of the year. We come to you three times a year because it's the most effective way we're able to raise the money to bring this to you. And right now, your contribution can go a long way because we're getting closer and closer to the last $100,000 left in the drive. So call now, 1-800-456-5372. And, you know, Brandon, I just mentioned about it paying for day to day. It's great because after you contribute, you really hear your contribution at work every day when you tune in.
That's right. You hear it not only on day to day in the world, which are shows which I love.
Yeah.
And they're just perfect for this time of day with everything that's going on. You just sit down and it's a lively forum for you to hear a wide variety of opinions and a wide variety of information. And you get that as well every day with Think. And on Fridays with Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. And if you want to continue to support that great content, you can do that by calling 1-800-456-5372. And thank you.
From the studios of NPR West, this is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. Not the president, not the Treasury Secretary, not all the King's men. No one could get the House of Representatives to pass the $700 billion Wall Street bailout bill. It failed today in a cliffhanger, and that sent the markets down sharply. There's yet another bank failure as well. This time it's Wachovia. Citigroup has agreed to buy that bank, and we'll have details later in the show. First, let's go to Capitol Hill. NPR's Brian Naylor is there. And Brian, oh my goodness, what a nail-biter.
I know, Madeline, there was quite a lot of drama here this afternoon as this vote was taking place. Everyone said it was going to be very close. There were a lot of lawmakers, Republicans and Democrats alike, who just didn't like this bill, who thought it was a burden on the taxpayer, a bailout of Wall Street. It was philosophically a problem for a lot of conservative Republicans and for a lot of liberal Democrats. And in the end, the leaders of both sides, all of whom supported this bill, just couldn't bring enough of their lawmakers on board. Let's recap some of the debate from earlier, if you'd like. Mm-hmm. The supporters of the bill were led by Massachusetts Democrat Barney Frank, who's the chairman of the Financial Services Committee, and he expressed the feeling that this wasn't the greatest bill, but that lawmakers had to do something. Here's what he had to say.
I wish it weren't the case, but I am convinced if we defeat this bill today, it will be a very bad day for the financial sector of the American economy. And the people who will feel the pain are not the top bankers and the top corporate executives, but average Americans. They don't see it yet. And pain averted is not a basis on which you get a lot of gratitude.
And of course, we've seen the market's response to the failure of the House to pass this bill. The Dow is down over 500 points. At one time, it was down almost 700 points. It remains to be seen how it'll all settle out. The opponents of the bill said that this was just not something that they could support. That they're hearing from their constituents, a hugely unpopular bill. Phone calls running 90-1 against it, and there is a sense that there's got to be a better way. This is Georgia Republican Congressman Paul Brown.
This is a huge cow patty with a piece of marshmallow stuck in the middle of it, and I'm not going to eat that cow patty. I encourage all of my members of my conference and your conference to vote against this bill so we can find something that makes sense.
kind of a earthy debate there for talking about Wall Street. But I mean, there was just a lot of distaste on this bill on both sides.
Right. And a lot of distaste out there among voters and constituents who, I think, from what I understand, barraged their lawmakers with complaints about this bailout, saying, no, don't vote for it. How much did the election, the upcoming election in about a month, play into the vote today?
Well, I think that can't be overstated, Madeline. You know, as you say, the election November 4th is coming up, and all of these members in the House are up for re-election, at least those who aren't retiring. And this is a real tough vote for them. How do you go against something that your constituents are overwhelmingly opposed to? Some members I heard talking about how this was as tough as going the vote to go to war with Iraq. And at the same time, there was a sense that they had to do something, that this was really a crisis, that even though people may not feel it right now, that they would down the road. And I should say, what's going on now, there's just a huge amount of partisan recriminations going on in the Capitol. The Republicans are blaming Speaker Pelosi for allegedly making a partisan speech that convinced several of their members who had been leaning for the bill to vote against it. And the Democrats are saying that the Republicans didn't take this seriously, and that they're to blame, and they're so this whole thing is just kind of falling apart.
Well, just cross now that there will not be a recess for House members to campaign for re-election, so they're back to work.
Yeah, they'll be back to work. I mean, it wasn't clear. They weren't going to go anywhere anyway right away. And so the Jewish holiday is today. And so members are already leaving town. They'll probably be back here on Wednesday or Thursday. And it's likely that they'll try to use that time to cool tempers down and to reassess the situation and try for another vote, perhaps on this same bill later in the week.
NPR congressional correspondent Brian Naylor keeping an eye on what's going on Capitol Hill, where the House of Representatives failed to pass that $700 billion bailout package. Brian, thank you.
Thanks, Madeline.
We go now to Michael Farr. He's the president of Farr, Miller & Washington. It's an investment firm in Washington, D.C. Mr. Farr, your reaction to this?
Madeline, I'm a little shocked. I thought that this would certainly pass. I think most of Wall Street thought that this bill would pass. And you can see Wall Street's disappointment. They vote with their feet. We saw the markets drop almost 700 points immediately as it appeared the bill would fail.
So what are investors doing right now? Are they putting all their money into T-bills?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what they're doing. We're seeing treasuries rally very, very strongly. Yields on one-year treasuries are now less than 1%. The two-year is 1.75%. And we've seen a very strong rally. The 10-year treasury yielding 3.6%. That's really interesting because the rate of inflation is higher than 3.6%. That means that people are willing to lock up their money for a pre-tax return when they're losing purchasing power against inflation. The conclusion there is, of course, that a return of your principal is suddenly much more important than a return on your principal.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the Fed? What can the Fed do to inject some liquidity into this market?
The Fed did inject some liquidity this morning, and they can certainly make another Fed pass. They have different opportunities to inject capital. The problem is time is running out, and time's running out in two different ways. It's running out for different financial institutions. We saw that for Wachovia this morning. Essentially, it failed and was taken over by Citigroup. There are others with their heads essentially on the block, and they need some sort of support or they too will fail. These bank failures are not good. The other thing that's going on is a sort of collective patience. Americans are trusting that Congress will do something to patch this hole in the boat. They have the means to patch the hole in the boat. The boat's still taking on water. The boat's beginning to list. Sooner or later, your passengers sort of abandon patience and start heading for the lifeboats. That becomes problematic. It has been one bank at a time. Congress needs to do something to make sure it's not systemic. Even if it's a one-stage patch, even if they do something now, amend it later, they need to do something now. We are in a very precarious, exceptionally precarious position with the financial system.
What do you see as the time frame here? Because this failed, and so it's obviously going to take a little bit more time for Congress to find a patch.
Yeah, well, I've been wrong so far once today about the time frame. I really thought that this would pass. Somehow, I really thought that that Congress would get it, that they would understand how precariously and dangerously positioned our entire financial system is. Each bank is interlinked with the other banks. Each assets, as they drop, hold assets of the others that also drop. So when one goes down, the strength of the other becomes impaired. So you kind of have to stop this now. I thought Congress would do it. I hope that they get on it very quickly. I hope that they stay at work overnight and until they can get something passed to offer some relief to the nation's banks.
Michael Farr is the president of Farr, Miller & Washington. It's an investment firm in Washington, D.C., and thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
U.S. markets started the day lower and dropped dramatically after the House voted down the bailout package. As we just heard, overseas, things were not much better. Jonathan Friedland is a columnist with the British newspaper The Guardian, and he follows world markets.
Well, they opened on a close and carried on falling, and confidence really shaken by the notion that the banks more widely are going to have to step in and foot the bill, or at least some of the bill, for the latest move, which is the nationalization by the British government of the Bradford and Bingley Bank, yet another one of these banks that had to be taken over the second here in Britain. But, you know, these are falling, it seems, like dominoes around the world.
Bradford and Bingley, big bank, big mortgage lender?
A big mortgage lender, began life as one of the, as the name suggests, as actually one of the sort of regional or small-scale building societies, which are really kind of like mutual-friendly societies in the Victorian era, concentrated on the city of Bradford. And this was really, in a way, how people bought houses until 10, 15 years ago, which is they would go to their local sort of mutual society where, much like the bank in It's a Wonderful Life, you know, run mm-hmm. by the James Stewart character, where just local people put their money in and the local money went out again to help people buy a home. That model endured for a very long time until they demutualized and gave up that kind of mutual membership structure and instead became regular banks, and Bradford and Bingley became one of the bigger ones, but fragile given the credit crunch, and that's why the government have had to step in here.
Now, the U.S.'s financial problems have obviously affected the world. And tell us, is it because the markets are so interconnected and these banks have holdings all over the world, is it partly that, but also partly because British banks did what U.S. banks did, and that was to enter into this risky world of mortgage-backed securities?
They didn't do it directly in the sense of lending people subprime mortgages right here. In a way, that was a knock-on effect, that they had their finances so intricately wound up, especially across the Atlantic, where people were buying debt and selling it on. Nevertheless, the idea of allowing people to borrow almost indefinitely based on their house and their home, that absolutely did happen here. That was the area, rather, in which people here did sort of float on this credit boom, rather than the very specific subprime circumstances that we know about from the United States.
Tell us, what do the Brits think of the Americans now? They were angry to begin with about the Iraq War and angry with Tony Blair for going along with it. What do they think now, now that there is this big financial crisis that originated here?
I think there's a sense that the degree of interest here in this country and all throughout the world, really, in the current American election is so fervent, and I think people misunderstand that, thinking it's just the soap opera quality. There was also a sense that really now the crucial decisions that will affect everybody's individual lives in countries far, far, far from America are being settled in America. There's a sense that really it is America that is absolutely making the weather that we all have to live with. No one thinks of this really anymore as a foreign election, because they know their own lives, their own pocketbooks, their own economic well-being is determined these days by events in the United States.
Jonathan Friedland is a columnist for Britain's Guardian newspaper. Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for KERA comes from you, our members, and from Klaus Dunn Koshbin, LLP, a law firm focused on employment and business litigation, dedicated to providing innovative solutions for companies, executives, and entrepreneurs facing business disputes. CDKLawyers.com. DHome, inviting you to an evening Slocum Street style on Thursday, October 2nd from 6 to 9 p.m. You can shop the showrooms from Highline to the end of Slocum, featuring the return of the Diffa Dallas Wreath Auction, rain or shine.
I'm Ira Glass of This American Life. Consider for a moment this fable of the pledge drive. Alexandra Roach, like many people, listened to public radio for years and years and years, before she ever pledged. In this case, 10 years. And while the pledge drive was going on, here's what she thought.
I'm too young. I'm too young to pledge. I don't have enough money. I'm sure there are plenty of other good citizens out there that are pledging, and they always seem to meet their goal, and what do they need my extra $100 for?
Is this you? If you're hearing the sound of my voice, statistics tell us chances are it is. Chances are 84% of the people who listen all the time and do not give, which chances are means you. 84% of you don't give because you believe that someone else will give.
There was just something about not being a member and being able to listen so attentively to every moment of every dollar that was tallied and every challenge that was met. It was such drama. And I knew that if ever they really, really needed it and I was the last person on earth, that I could save the day, I could call in and I could pledge and everything would be okay and it would have been my call.
So you had a whole heroic story, an epic story, ready to go.
Oh, yeah.
In which
I mean,
you
a
were
10-year-old epic story.
Friends, is this you? Are you waiting for exactly the right moment when you can jump in on your white horse? Please, please don't torture us. You know, the pledge drive could be a lot shorter if you would just call. And as you consider whether, in fact, I am talking to you, I would ask you simply to examine your own behavior. My friend, you're not just listening to your public radio station. You have stayed with us through the pledge drive, which means, essentially, you're an addict. You're a lifer. You are hardcore. And you know you've been meaning to get around to it. You know in your heart you've been meaning to get around to it. And you know that we're not kidding. We need your help. Those of us who do the programs here on this public radio station, you know, we want to go back to our regular jobs making programs and fulfilling the mission of public broadcasting to bring you stories and voices you can't hear anywhere else. We don't want to be here pitching. We don't want to be here asking for money. Take us out of our misery. Get on your white horse now. Now is the time. And look at yourself. Just look at yourself. It's you and me. It's you and me. And neither of us wants to be here during the drive. And you can put an end to it for all of us by picking up the phone right now. Help us out if you can. And thanks. Here is the number to call.
The number is 800-456-5372. You're still there if you haven't already called. You've listened through that Ira Glass spot. Become a new member. Renew your membership. Make an additional gift, and you'll be supporting your public radio station here in North Texas. The number is 800-456-5372. Well, it's day to day. The program continues in just a couple minutes, but we're here to ask you to become a new member, to renew your membership, or make an additional gift. It's membership week here at the station. I'm Jeff Ramirez. I'm here with Brandlin Barnett. Brandlin is the assistant producer for the Think Radio and Television series. He also, you also screen the telephone calls for anything you ever wanted to know.
That's right.
So you're all over the place here.
I am. And one of the reasons is I love KERA, and we know that you do too. So show your love and support by calling 1-800-456-5372. You heard today on Think, you heard Philip Smith talking about his new memoir, Walking Through Walls. You heard Elizabeth Lundy talking about the secret lives of great artists. And what did we learn? That Andy Warhol was on the Love Boat, and just so much great information and such great entertainment. And that's where your money goes when you make a contribution to KERA. You can do it by going online to kera.org, or you can call 1-800-456-5372 and help us in this drive and get back to our normal, regularly scheduled content without breaks.
Yeah, Brandlin, you were just mentioning who was on Think earlier today. And I'm like a lot of other listeners out there. I was listening to the interview in the first hour with Elizabeth, and when she mentioned the point about Andy Warhol once appearing on Love Boat, like lots of other listeners, I just went online and I didn't go to Google. I went to YouTube because Elizabeth had mentioned that the spot might be there on YouTube, and I just went to YouTube. I typed into the search field Andy Warhol and Love Boat, and there came up the spot actually with Tom Bosley, who played Howard Cunningham on the Happy Days. But you're kind of like, what, you're 18 years old?
No, not 18, but that is a little bit outside my cultural reference space. But today we are counting down to the end of the drive, and you can help us get there. You can come in, ride in on your white horse, and help KERA in this pledge drive before, what is it, tomorrow at 7 p.m.?
Well, yeah, there's every opportunity that the drive will end tomorrow because we have just less than $12,000 left to raise to cross over into $400,000 territory. And really, once we get there, it's on cruise control to $500,000. And that's the overall goal for this campaign. And, we've come up with that $500,000 goal because really that's how much we need to raise to cover the cost of programs like Day to Day and Morning Edition and Fresh Air and Think. We're not here trying to raise as much money as we can. That's how much the station needs to cover the budget to air programs like Day to Day here in North Texas. So when you make your contribution, you really are helping to pay for programs that you listen to every day. So you use the programs, you listen to the programs, you learn something new every day. If you're not already a member, if you don't already make a contribution to support public radio here in North Texas, do so now. It's membership week. We've got the big membership tent up, and we promise you, as soon as we hit $500,000, and we have every opportunity to do that tomorrow, we just take apart that tent and we return to the regular schedule of programs, kind of put the tent over in Brandon Lynn's desk or under your desk.
That's right. No matter why you love KERA, whether it's because Morning Edition and you can't live without that being a part of your routine, whether it's Diane Reem's show, I know I listen to that on the way to work, or whether it's Think, and personally, I'm so proud to be a part of that production team, and I love the storytellers, people like Ken Wells talking right after Gustav and Ike, and talking about life after Katrina in the bayou. Whether you love those storytellers or whether you love Day to Day or getting stumped by the geo quiz on the world, now's your time to show what that means to you by calling 1-800-456-5372 or going online to kera.org and making your contribution.
Okay, we'll be returning to Day to Day in just about 3 more minutes, so you have about 3 more minutes to make that call or to go online before we return to the program. So we'll be giving out the telephone number in probably another minute, and then in 2 minutes, and then in 3 minutes. So if you want to get ready to call the station or dial your phone while we're giving out the telephone number, just go ahead and get ready. Get your cell phone in your hand, walk over to the phone there at your home or in your office, and we'll be giving out the number again, and we'll be giving it out slowly enough for you to dial while we give out the phone number. So, I have a question for you, Brandlin. You're 23, 24?
Mm-hmm.
You're 24 years old, and you have traveled like to 3 times as many places as I have. And so I wanted to ask you, what kind of connection, now that you're 24 years old, you've traveled to 14, you said 14 countries.
Yes.
Brandlin has been to 14 countries around the world. When you listen to public radio today, does it give you the kind of perspective, both public radio and the traveling that you've done in your lifetime, that you don't think you would have otherwise if you, the young man that you are, have listened to public radio as long as you have?
I think you get a real sense of people around the world and perspectives that you don't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's not thrown at you, to make you believe something. You get the whole wide spectrum of everything that's going on in this world. You get that with the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. You get that on so many different programs, and that's what NPR is all about. And I've listened to this, to KERA online through the streaming service, as I've been in all the places I've been, and it's a very, very good way to stay grounded. Charlotte Stowers in Flower Mound, Connie Williams in Farmers Branch, they understand what KERA means to this community, and they've made their contributions along with Eileen Curtis in Allentown, Pennsylvania, Sean and Pam in Frisco, and Imani Howard in Irving. You can join them now by calling 1-800-456-5372 and making your contribution.
All right, Brandlin, we have $111,000 more to go to the overall goal of $500,000, and our promise remains that as soon as we raise the goal of $500,000, we pull down the membership temp, we fold it up, we put it back into Brandlin's desk, and we return to the regular schedule of programs immediately. So the phone number, if you're ready to dial, here's the phone number. It's a toll-free number, so we take the charge. You know, it's a free call. Here's the number. Okay, you ready to dial? It's 1-800-456-5372. If you didn't get the number that first time, here it is again. It's 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online, fill out the membership form all on your own, and you can pull down the window to see all the thank you gifts that are available at levels from $35 all the way up to $1,500. You know what, Brandlin? If you sign up at the $1,500 level, we'll send you, as our way of saying thanks, 7,500 American Airlines Advantage miles. How about that?
There are a lot of thank you gifts available, so call 1-800-456-5372.
Thank you.
This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. The $700 billion Wall Street bailout package is dead. The House failed to approve it today by a narrow margin, 23 votes. We'll have more on that story later in the program. First, though, a major development today in the ongoing story of the fired U.S. attorneys. You may remember 9 of them were fired by former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. A lot of people said that was for political reasons. Well, a report out today from the Justice Department says crimes may have been committed as well. And now Attorney General Michael Mukasey has appointed a special prosecutor to investigate further. I spoke with NPR Justice Department correspondent Ari Shapiro earlier today, and he began by recapping the story of the 9 prosecutors let go for a variety of reasons.
There were 7 let go all in one day, 2 dismissed before that. And as this unfolded, we had just a patchwork quilt of different reasons that, you know, people were claiming this was performance related. It was so that other people would have a chance to serve. And the question was, were people really being fired because they were not aggressive enough about prosecuting Democrats, or they were too aggressive about prosecuting Republicans? And this report today comes to the conclusion that there is substantial evidence to indicate that people were fired for partisan political reasons. The problem is, not everybody would cooperate with this investigation. Members of Congress, people in the White House, in some cases, refused to talk to investigators. And that's why, as you mentioned, Attorney General Michael Mukasey is now appointing a special prosecutor to continue this investigation.
So tell us, this is a lengthy report. What are the headlines?
Well, the sort of biggest trouble spot is the firing of David Iglesias, who was the prosecutor in New Mexico. And the senator from New Mexico, Pete Domenici, a Republican, had complained that Iglesias was not bringing voter fraud cases against Democratic activists just before the election. And there are real fingerprints on this report suggesting that Iglesias may have been fired because he would not indict those Democrats. And that's potentially illegal. But Domenici would not cooperate with this investigation, and so the report stops just short of saying that any crime was in fact committed. When you look at the big picture in this report, you get an image of the Justice Department as a place where there were frankly no adults at all. I mean, there's just stunning criticism in here of Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General, his deputy Paul McNulty, his chief of staff Kyle Sampson. Nobody emerges from this unscathed. Let me just read you one quote here, Madeline. Mm-hmm. It says, "We believe department leaders abdicated their responsibility to ensure that prosecutorial decisions would be based on the law, the evidence, and department policy, rather than political pressure related to the handling of specific cases."
So, Ari, if the report says that Gonzalez, former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, abdicated his responsibility and wasn't really paying attention, who was paying attention and who did order the firings, according to this report of these
9?
Well,
the White House was involved, but of course, because White House officials would not cooperate in this, we don't know exactly how involved they were. I mean, you know, there are these titles pinned to people involved in the process where Kyle Sampson, the chief of staff, described himself as the aggregate. He's the one who maintained the list of people who were to be fired. Gonzalez described himself as the delegator, the one who gave responsibility to Sampson and others. But when you try to pin down in each of these U.S. attorneys who was responsible for deciding that they were fired, in this report, you've got basically 390 pages of everyone pointing fingers at everybody else. You know, it's this question of what role the White House played is really interesting. There's kind of a bait and switch here where you had the White House counsel's office telling people in the White House, we want you to cooperate with this investigation. But then the White House counsel's office created an internal timeline of the U.S. attorney firings just so that they could, you know, understand what happened. They shared that timeline with one part of the Justice Department, and when the Inspector General's office doing this investigation asked for the timeline, the same White House counsel's office that said, we advise everybody to cooperate with this investigation, said, no, we're not going to share the timeline with you. So there are still big questions remaining here.
Okay, and those questions will presumably be followed up by this Nora Danahy, who's the special prosecutor from Connecticut. What do we know about her very quickly?
She's been working for the department since 1991. She was the first woman to run the Connecticut U.S. Attorney's Office. And she's got her work cut out for her.
She certainly does. Thank you very much. NPR Justice correspondent Ari Shapiro. Stay with us. NPR's Day to Day continues. Back now with Day to Day, I'm Madeline Brand. The markets are reacting to news that the $700 billion bailout package failed to pass the House today. Stocks plunged. The Dow lost hundreds of points. The Nasdaq was down by more than 7% at one point. Meanwhile, the credit crisis appears to be spreading. Wachovia is the latest bank to fail. It's being taken over by Citigroup. Marketplace's Janet Babin is here now. Janet, first, tell us more about how the markets are reacting to news that this bailout did not pass.
Well, it was a bit of a roller coaster, Madeline. The Dow Jones Industrial Average took a dive as it became clear that this bailout package was not going to pass. At one point, down more than 700 points. That was its biggest intraday point drop. The S&P lost more than 7%. The Nasdaq fell more than 6%. Now, since then, the markets have recovered somewhat. They've seemed to be in a holding pattern, waiting for what might come next. And all stocks, of course, were not falling. Coke and Southwest were trading higher at one point. But again, this isn't a good sign for the markets or for the credit markets. Earlier today, the Federal Reserve announced that it and the foreign central banks were going to pump billions more dollars into the system to prop up those credit markets.
Well, certainly the markets don't like uncertainty, and there's a lot of it out there today. Let's talk about Wachovia and its deal with Citigroup.
Right. This is not, they say, a bailout. They say that this is more like a merger. But as we all know by now, Wachovia was in trouble because it had too many adjustable rate mortgages and toxic debt on its books. Under this deal, it's going to sell its retail investment bank and its wealth management business to Citigroup. Citigroup would assume $52 billion in debt, and the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, would cover any remaining losses.
And what does that mean for customers?
Well, since I'm one, thank goodness, but thank goodness anyway, that Wachovia's customers, of course, like all bank depositors, will be protected, insured up to $100,000. Shareholders, though, things get a bit dicier for Wachovia shareholders. It looks like, Madeline, they are going to get some value for their stocks, but that's not all worked out yet. Bill Brown, I spoke to him about this today. He's a visiting professor at Duke Law School, and Brown says Wachovia shareholders, one way or another, they're going to feel the pain, and one of those shareholders is his father.
I just say, Dad, you've got to lick your wounds. You've got to redeploy your capital in ways that really reflect the risks that you want to have going forward.
Brown says there is an upside. There will be a lot of bargains out there.
And what are the possible downsides?
Well, the concerns about this deal is that you're going to have three big banks, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan Chase, and now Citigroup, holding 30% or more of all U.S. deposits. And North Carolina Commissioner of Banks Joe Smith told me that that concentration is troubling for customers and for small banks.
The concern I have right now is that the big dogs don't take up all the capital and all the liquidity in the market and leave the banks that didn't do any of the stuff that caused this mess short of those commodities. Because that, to me, can hurt our real economy.
Madeline?
Thank you, Janet. That's Janet Babin of Public Radio's daily business show, Marketplace.
Next time on Marketplace, the latest from Wall Street and Washington on the financial crisis. Deal or no deal? Join us for Fallout, our special coverage of the mess in the financial markets on Marketplace from American Public Media.
Support for Day Today's Marketplace Report comes from Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a financial services organization providing nearly 3 million members with financial products and services, online at thrivent.com.
Stay with us. NPR's Day Today continues. This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand. The holy month of Ramadan concludes later this week. For many Muslim Americans, iftar, the evening meal that breaks each day's fast, is like a mini Thanksgiving. Families spend hours cooking traditional dishes, and they make a point of eating together every night. NPR's Jamie Terabay has more.
There's kitschy 80s background music at Salma Ashwawi's local giant supermarket. She's here picking up a few essentials for the iftar meal.
Oh, I need tomatoes.
Peering over her juicy couture spectacles, she checks out a food label. It's nowhere near as hard to find Islam-sanctioned food today as it was 26 years ago when she and her husband came here from Egypt. Back then, she didn't even know what some of the food was.
We went out to dinner, and we asked for baby back ribs, and the guy looked at me and looked at my husband.
The waiter noticed she was wearing a headscarf and figured they were Muslim.
And then he leaned down close to my husband's head and told him, "This is pork, you know that." He looked at him and said, "Oh, thank you, we don't want it."
A trip to a nearby Costco for more food, and the Ashwawi is done. Driving her minivan home, she admits there are few traditions her and her family are able to keep in a country that isn't Muslim. But fasting during Ramadan is something they all do. Raising her kids to be Muslim and American has been a challenge.
When Ahmed was younger, I remember he used to want to watch violent R movies, and I would say no. And he says, "But my friend so-and-so did." And I would say, "I don't care. That's not me. We have a different, you know, we do it differently."
By 3 p.m., she's back in their Virginia home. Ashmawi's husband, a college professor, is downstairs in his office. Their youngest son, Muhammad, leafs through a recipe book. He'll marinate mushrooms to go along with the main dish.
I know, I want to. I love them. He says use one whole piece of garlic for the recipe.
Pretty soon, Muhammad is mashing garlic for his marinade, and his mother is preparing, of all things, a brisket.
We went to a Jewish temple for Yom Kippur, but they had brisket, and I loved it. And I was like, I've got to try to cook this. They'd love it now.
Her elder daughter, Aya, walks into the kitchen and starts unwrapping spinach phyllo pastries. She's back at home working on her PhD.
Yeah, I definitely missed it when I was at school. It was breaking my fast in my dorm room. And when I had friends around, we would try to go to the cafeteria together, but it's definitely different than being among your family.
Pretty soon, the kitchen fills up.
Uh-oh, fog! Fog!
Milk!
Ashmawi hurries to put out the flames, but it's nothing serious. The milk is part of the custard for today's dessert. Watching the whole scene is her eldest son, Ahmed, who likes to tease his mother.
Mom spends the whole day cooking, and it seems like it's the only part of the year she cooks.
Before long, it's time to break the fast. Ashmawi's husband Hassan emerges from his office and flips on the television to an Egyptian channel. He says a prayer before slipping a date into his mouth. The whole family soon piles into the dining room.
Soup today is better than any day.
Jamie Tarabay, NPR News.
Punk rock and Buddhism. Not a lot in common, you'd think, except, well, maybe for the shaved heads. But a lot of punkers are becoming Buddhists. Anil Mundra has more from Denver.
First, to settle the mind, here's a koan, a Zen riddle. What is the sound of American Buddhism? How about this?
Drop the A-bomb on me!
So, for anyone who doesn't believe that Buddhism is punk, here's proof. Brad Warner's hardcore band, Zero Defects. Well, besides being a bona fide punk rocker, Brad Warner is an ordained Zen master. He writes books with titles like Sit Down and Shut Up, which is just what you do in Zazen, Zen meditation. And that book promises punk rock commentaries on Buddha, God, truth, sex, and death. But what does punk rock have to do with Buddhism?
There's a disdain for authority. There's a strong sense that the individual is responsible for herself or for himself.
In Warner's first book, Hardcore Zen, he shows that Buddhism and punk share an aspect of rebellion. Of course, Warner admits that at some point in a Zen master's day, the punk rock needs to turn off.
I have practiced Zazen in punk rock houses full of filth and garbage, but it's much more difficult.
That might be when the Buddhist punk reaches for one of those very Zen little bells. That's Noah Levine doing the ringing. He doesn't quite fit the Buddhist stereotype either. At a glance, some might have him for a hooligan, with his shaved head, silver tooth, and his tattoo-covered body. The left side of his neck says Dharma punks. That's punks with an X. And Dharma, that's Sanskrit, and it means the truth. It's also the title of Levine's memoir of his journey from punk to Buddhist punk.
I came to meditation practice, to Buddhism, strung out on drugs, filled with rage.
The other side of his neck says Against the Stream. That sounds like the name of a punk band, but it's actually Levine's meditation society and his second book, A Buddhist Primer for the New Generation.
Against greed, against hatred, against delusion.
Levine's ethic is captured in a new film called Meditate and Destroy. That method has attracted thousands of students all over North America and Europe. At a class in Denver, 100 people pack onto cushions to meditate with him.
Bringing some awareness to your breath.
There's two guys sitting cross-legged in front of me with 7 piercings and yards of tattoos between them. Levine asks if anyone in the audience is in recovery, like he is.
It's actually my 20 years this week. Sober.
Most of them, by a show of hands, are former addicts, too.
How the hell did I get here? From there?
Levine was doing drugs by the time he was 10. Spent his teens as a crack addict, stealing and brawling. He started meditating when he hit rock bottom in jail. In the front row of Levine's class in Denver, 24-year-old Sam Cordell speaks up.
And my whole life I thought doing what I wanted to do was free. That wound me up in prison, and I did 18 months, and I'm in a halfway house right now. And then I realized that freedom was in me.
Buddhism in America usually evokes hippies and yuppies. But Levine's group teaches meditation to, among others, convicts and homeless people like 53-year-old Todd David Schwartz. He lives out of a duffel bag in the gritty L.A. neighborhood where Levine's group has its center.
At the end of the session, I swear to God, I feel like a man who has been crawling around the desert. And I feel like after spending some time meditating and listening to Noah, I feel like I've just been given this fresh, cold glass of water.
Schwartz is quite a success story, really. Not everybody enjoys meditating so much. Levine says a bit of struggle with meditation is the norm, which is another thing that's kind of punk about it.
Right here in meditation, we say, stop thinking, pay attention to the breath. And your mind says, F you. I will do whatever I want. We begin to understand that it is inner anarchy.
I want to destroy, boss it by, cause I want to be anarchy.
That's the classic punk band, the Sex Pistols. They definitely weren't Buddhists, but they might have liked what some Zen masters say. Our rule is no rule. For NPR News, I'm Anil Mundra.
Support for KERA comes from you, our members, and from Donna Wilhelm, who supports KERA's coverage of the arts in North Texas and encourages you to experience the artistic expressions in your community. Texas Oncology, with more than 1,000 cancer specialists practicing in communities throughout the state. More at texasoncology.com.
Hi, it's Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz, with a fun fact that you may not know. If you call KERA right now at 1-800-456-5372, you can help KERA shorten the pledge drive by raising a lot of money to take off the goal. You can do this by contributing at any level. You'll be participating in your community by helping the station provide its service to North Texas. So what are you waiting for? Call now and support your North Texas public radio station. The number, 1-800-456-5372. 5372, or go online to kera.org. This is such a great opportunity. Not even Carl Castle could make it sound better.
This is Carl Castle from NPR News responding to Peter Sagal's claim that I can't make the reasons to call KERA sound better. Well, if you call KERA right now and talk to a volunteer, you'll soon see how special this moment will be in your life. You'll notice the sun will shine a little brighter each day. Calling KERA will be a good deed that will magically rub off on others. People around you will pull over and let you pass. Yes, even on the LBJ freeway. Your kids will clean their rooms so you can have more time to yourself. Your neighbor will return all those things they've stolen, borrowed from your garage. And telemarketers, they'll quit calling your house for 10 minutes. In all seriousness, please call KERA today and pledge your support. 1-800-456-5372 or go online to kera.org. And thanks for your support.
Well, thanks, Carl. That's Carl Castle from National Public Radio. Put that together for us because he knows, he finds it very important. He wants you to support public radio here in North Texas. It's KERA, and the phone number is 800-456-5372. That's 800-456-5372. It's membership time. It's your opportunity to call the station and become a new member, renew your membership, or make an additional gift like you always do at this time of the year. Well, good afternoon. I'm Jeff Ramirez, and I'm here with Brandlin Barnett. Good afternoon, Brandlin.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
So on our last break, Brandlin, we were talking about the many places that you've traveled all around the world, and I want to get back to that conversation, but let's let our listeners know where we are in the drive right now.
We have raised about $390,000, so we, meaning us here at the station and you out there in the public radio, the NPR, the KERA community, we are all that much closer to reaching our goal of $500,000. And we can do it by tomorrow at 7 p.m. We have a challenge on the table, an extra $2,750 if we can reach the goal. We need your support. You can do that by calling 1-800-456-5372. We've already heard from Kravins family, the Kravins family in Dallas, Aaron Hudson in Dallas, Charlotte and Oren in Denton. We've heard from Paul Hubner in Plano, Kimberly Pacer in Plano, and they've all called because they understand what public radio means to them and their community. So they've called 1-800-456-5372 or gone online and contributed, and you can join them.
You know, since 6 o'clock this morning, you know, I've been here with Jeff Whittington and then Sam Baker and Justin Martin were on the air. And then, I was back on the air again with Scott Murray. Then Jeff Whittington and Chris Boyd have been here the last couple hours. And now you're here with me, Brandlin. The reason why we're all here is, you know, we're raising funds for you and you're raising funds for yourself to help cover the cost of your public radio station here in North Texas. You're the one who makes public radio happen here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. It's your contributions that help cover over half the cost of a program like Day to Day here in North Texas. Coming up, it's The World from Public Radio International. And every year, we have to send $50,000 to Public Radio International to air the program, The World, here in North Texas. Please know that when we say we're listener supported, we're very serious about that, because 53 cents of every dollar that the station spends on programs like The World and Day to Day and Morning Edition and All Things Considered comes from listeners just like you. And it's a great way to run a radio station because it means we're accountable. This station is accountable to the people who provide 53 cents of every dollar to pay for the programs. That's where your money gets used. That's where it's put to work. And you hear it every day. So call the station. The number is 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org, where you can fill out the membership form all on your own. You can look at the thank you gifts that we've been talking about over the last week. One of the new thank you gifts for this drive, and it's great. It's called the Radio Bookmark. It's about the size of the fob that you use to open your car.
It's a little thumb drive.
Thumb drive. Young Mr. Brandlin knows what these things are called. But anyway, the number is 800-456-5372. We'll be back in a couple seconds, but we want to play this for you.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. And as you think about whether to pledge here on public radio, consider for a second how commercial radio and television work. Last year, $42 billion were spent on television ads. $3.5 billion were spent on radio ads. And you know where that money comes from. That comes from you and me. We pay for that every time we buy really anything that advertises on radio or television. How much does it work out to a year? I'm glad you asked. It works out to $208 for each adult in this country, which basically just gets siphoned invisibly off of you and me, right? We don't even get a choice. Okay. Here on public radio, it's way more straightforward. First of all, you get a choice. And if you're somebody who does listen all the time and you've been thinking maybe someday you might want to help out, I would just ask you, just as you make that choice, to consider this fact, okay? You are already pitching in. You are already underwriting all sorts of radio stations and television stations to the tune of $208 a year. But they're not necessarily radio and television stations you even like, you know? You are subsidizing television shows that you despise. You're underwriting radio stations who you hate, whose guts you hate. Wouldn't you like to support a radio station that you actually listen to? You know, you're already throwing $208 to all these other people that you don't listen to. Wouldn't you like to vote with your dollars every now and then for something that you actually believe in? Stand up for what you actually like. You're giving money to all these other radio stations, to all these other television stations. Stand up for what you like by calling this number.
And the number is 800-456-5372. That's 800-456-KERA or online at kera.org. Thanks, Ira. That was Ira putting together a nice little spot for us. I'm Jeff Ramirez. I'm here with Brandlin Barnett. Brandlin, before we took that break to play that spot, we were talking about the many places you've traveled around the country as a young man. You're 20, or around the world, in fact. I mean, you're 24 years old, and NPR has reporters all around the world. And contributions from listeners help cover the costs of getting those reporters all over the world. So I'm going to play a little game with you. When I name the reporter, you kind of tell me what it makes you think of from your travels, okay? Okay, first reporter, Michael Sullivan.
When I think of Michael Sullivan, I think about my time in Laos and Southeast Asia and the kind of people that you meet there and just how open everyone is to having a conversation. And really, that's what you hear when you're listening to NPR. You see Michael Sullivan out in the streets just as if you were there. You can close your eyes. You can hear the sound of the tuk-tuks in the background. You can hear everything. And all they do is ask a question and try to understand with as much depth as possible what's going on. And then I think of a show like Anything You Ever Wanted to Know, where we have people call in and ask about what is a cyclone and what's the difference between a cyclone and a hurricane. And there's so much depth of content available here on NPR. And on KERA.
Yeah, we'll keep talking about it during The World, since The World actually is an international news coverage program. And that's coming up in just a couple minutes. Right now, though, we're waiting for your call. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 800-456-5372. Thanks for your support.
Support for NPR comes from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, announcing Kids Count, a state-by-state look at child well-being and juvenile justice reform. At aecf.org.
from the Wallace Foundation, whose Knowledge Center is where education leaders can go to learn about improving teaching and learning. Downloads at wallacefoundation.org. And from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Thank you. We're taking a break right now to ask for your contribution to KERA. You can do that by calling 1-800-456-5372 or going online to kera.org to support the great content that you know and love, which is made possible by your support to your public radio station.
KERA is listener-supported. We've got the membership tent up this week. It's membership week, and our promise remains, as always, as soon as we raise the $500,000 goal, the tent comes down, and we end the drive immediately, and we return to the regular schedule of programming. It's always exciting when that happens, and we have every opportunity to wrap up the drive by tomorrow, but we need to keep making the progress that we've been making so far today, and it's been great. The telephone number is 800-456-5372. Thanks to everyone who's done their part already, calling in or going online and making a contribution. Thanks to Joe Keaton in Plano, Ron and Miriam Honig in Coppell, and Hazel Davis in Sachse. They've all done their part, just like Catherine Pate in Dallas and Angela Meyer, who's also in Dallas, and Sean Kelly in Plano. Thank you to all of you for doing your part. You've moved from the listener to supporting listener to renewing member to additional gift member of the station. Thank you all so much. You're doing your part. Right now, we're waiting for your call. The number is 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. At the website, you can fill out the membership form all on your own. You can also take a look at the thank you gifts that are available at levels from $35 all the way up to $1,500. So go to the website. It's kera.org, or you can call 800-456-5372. You are listening to KERA 90.1, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. Thank you so much for your support.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. The House of Representatives has narrowly defeated the sweeping financial rescue plan that had the strong backing of President Bush and congressional leaders of both parties. The bill failed by just 13 votes. Nearly two-thirds of Democrats voted for the legislation. More than two-thirds of Republicans voted against it. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Democrats fulfilled their pledge to Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson.
You impressed our members, and the president impressed the members about the gravity of the situation, that action was necessary to stabilize the markets and to protect the taxpayer. Clearly, that message has not been received yet by the Republican caucus. But again, we extend a hand of cooperation to the White House, to the Republicans, so that we can get this issue resolved.
But House GOP leader John Boehner blamed Pelosi for the bill's failure and said the measure needs further improvements.
I don't know that we know the path forward at this point. But it's clear that it's going to take members on both sides of the aisle to work together in order to resolve this. And so we need everybody to calm down and relax and get back to work.
The White House says President Bush was very disappointed in the House vote. He spoke with reporters in the Oval Office where he was meeting with the president of Ukraine.
We put forth a plan that was big because we got a big problem. I'm going to be talking to my economic advisors after my meeting here with the president, and we'll be working with members of Congress, leaders of Congress, on a way forward.
Supporters of the legislation have pledged to bring it back up for a vote in the House, but given the upcoming Jewish holiday and procedural issues, lawmakers say a new vote in the House is not likely before Wednesday. The House action today triggered a sharp sell-off on Wall Street, where stocks were trading lower even before the historic vote on the landmark bill. NPR's Langfitt reports.
Without a plan at the moment to address the nation's financial crisis, the stock market is plagued with uncertainty. The response? Heavy selling. The Standard & Poor's 500 was down as much as 7% during the day. That's the most since the crash of 1987. Investors rushed toward the relative safety of Treasury bills, and oil futures dropped to $96 a barrel on fears of a global economic slowdown. Earlier in the day, anxious banks began charging more to lend money to each other. Also weighing on the market are signs the financial crisis is spreading to Europe. Governments there had to step in over the weekend and rescue several banks. Frank Langfitt, NPR News, Washington.
Just before the closing bell on Wall Street, the Dow Industrial Average was down 625 points at 10,517. The NASDAQ Composite Index off 152 points, and the S&P 500 Index was down 85. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at hewlett.org.
Time is 3:04. It's Membership Week. It's also The World here on KERA, and we'll be starting the program in just a couple of minutes. But it's a break for a moment or two to ask you to call the station or go online and become a new member, renew your membership, or make an additional gift. It's membership time. The phone number is 800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. I'm Jeff Ramirez, and I'm here with Branlyn Barnett. Hi, Branlyn.
Hi, Jeff. We have already heard from Richard and Linda Bork in Duncanville, from Dennis and Mark Rodriguez in Dallas, and you can join them now by supporting your public radio station and calling the number that Jeff just mentioned, and I'm going to mention again, slow it down for you, 1-800-456-5372. That's the number to call with your support. Our volunteers are standing by. They're ready to answer any questions you might have. We have some great gifts available for anyone who wants to make a contribution, or if you don't want one, make a contribution at whatever level you're comfortable with, $35, $60, $100. Become a sustaining member. For at the $120 level, you can get the book Walking Through Walls, or rather, The Secret Lives of Great Artists. We had her on Think Today, Elizabeth Lundy. So if you heard that conversation and you're interested, give us a call at 1-800-456-5372 and pledge your support.
Yeah, all the thank you gifts that we've been talking about the last week are still available. You can take a look at them online. You know, something that we introduced, I think about two drives ago, Branlyn, the Solio Hybrid 1000 charger, I think that's what it's called, the Solio Hybrid Charger. Anyway, it's a compact solar charger that you can use to charge up your cell phone, your MP3 player. It's really cool. So take a look at that. I believe it's still available at the $180 level at kera.org. Thank you so much for your support.
PRI's The World is supported by the Medtronic Foundation. During Sudden Cardiac Awareness Month, learn more about SCA risks and treatment at hearthelp.com. And the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org.
I'm Lisa Mullins, and this is The World. President Bush lobbied for it. Congressional leaders pleaded for it. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson even got down on one knee to beg for it. But the House of Representatives today defeated a $700 billion rescue package for the financial industry. Indiana